Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 261, Practical Life Philosophy with Brian Johnson. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
And then I decided to give myself a PhD in how to live. So I had long looked at positive psychology programs from Seligman and Sternberg and these other guys I really admire to PhD programs in philosophy or religious studies, but none of them really integrated all of the ideas that I wanted to study. So I decided somewhat playfully to give myself my own PhD. And I would study old school philosophy and spirituality and mysticism to modern day positive psychology and self-development and creativity and health and nutrition in relationships and business and all the things that I think go into creating a really thriving life in the 21st century. And then the idea was I'd get a master's when I had read 100 of the classic optimal living books and distilled them into 6-page PDFs and 20-minute MP3s that I got paid to create. So there was an integration of following my heart and my passion with getting paid to do it.
That was the voice of my guest, Brian Johnson, speaking about his passion for developing programs to inspire and enhance optimal living. Brian Johnson describes himself as the philosopher and CEO of Entheos Enterprises, where he has fun integrating his passion for practical philosophy with his passion for creating cool businesses that inspire and empower people to live their most authentically awesome lives. A few years ago, Brian decided to sell the business he was running and give himself a PhD in optimal living. As you heard, he couldn't find a program that integrated everything he wanted to study, from old school philosophy, positive psychology, and spirituality, to nutrition, health and fitness, creativity, business, and modern self-improvement. So he decided to create his own doctoral program. And as you heard, he earned his master's by creating Philosopher's Notes, where he shares more wisdom in less time by distilling the big ideas from his favorite optimal living classics into fun, inspiring, and super practical 6-page PDFs, 20-minute MP3s, and 10-minute PNTV episodes. His dissertation came in the form of a little book called A Philosopher's Notes, where he distilled his favorite 100 big ideas on optimal living. In his past lives, Brian built and sold the social networking sites eTeams and Zods. He's a proud law school dropout and a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of UCLA, where he studied psychology and business. Brian goes on to say that he enjoys spooning with his goddess when he's not reading, hiking, creating, or otherwise enjoying himself. Now, here's the interview. Brian Johnson, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you so much, Dave. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm really happy to have this opportunity to meet with you and to discuss your work. I have to thank listener Alexei Soma. Is it Alexei or Alexei? Do you know?
I don't. I call him Alex. Yeah,
that's probably what I should do, too. Well, he urged me to have you on as a guest, and I have to confess, I had not been aware of you before that suggestion, but I mentioned your name to one of my good friends who's very much into spirituality and self-improvement, and he immediately lit up with recognition. Oh, yeah, he's great. I know him. So,
wow, awesome.
Yeah. Well, you call yourself a philosopher on your website and in your writing, and but not necessarily in the academic sense. So maybe that's a good place for us to start.
Great. Well, you know, I'm really having fun with the idea of rebranding what a philosopher is in the 21st century. And for me, I go back to the Greek roots of the word and philosophia, which constitute philosopher, of course. And philo is you know, one of the three words the Greeks used for love and signified friendship or admiration of, it's philanthropist and all the words like that. And the idea of just a lover of wisdom, someone who's passionate about understanding how to live, you know, and I fell into that word, or discovered that word rather, just fell in love with the idea and absolutely loved wisdom and thought calling myself a philosopher would be a fun thing to do. And that's kind of where it came from. And then really having fun with it more than anything else.
Yeah. And it really makes sense the way that you're approaching it. Well, I'm really curious to know about your evolution. Let's start at the beginning, where you grew up and what your childhood years were like and all of that.
Wow. Well, grew up in Southern California in Orange County in a very conservative Catholic family. Went to Catholic school for 12 years. My father worked in a grocery store and retired with union benefits. Neither of my parents went to college. And it's a really conservative, blue-collar Catholic family. And from a young age, I kind of questioned some of the ideas that we talked about and that kind of evolved as I went to school at UCLA and went from there. But I don't know how much detail you want to go into the younger parts. Well, I'll pause there and check in with you.
Oh, no, you're doing great. What did you think you wanted to be when you grew up, say, in your teens?
You know, I didn't spend a whole lot of time thinking about that. I think I had, as a kid, I had everything from a farmer to a baseball player. But, yeah, the typical kid stuff. But I don't remember having a clear sense. I was a smart kid and did well in school, but really shy and kind of just part of that conservative family. And my father was also an alcoholic, and kind of I played the golden child role in that family. So it was more about just doing what needed to get done and following the rules really well and questioning things, but not too significantly. And didn't really have a good sense of that. And then that started to evolve as I went to university, went to UCLA and thought I'd be a doctor going there and realized I'm not into biology and went more into human behavior and really loved psychology. And, you know, did some research with a graduate student at UCLA and realized at the time I was working on autism studies and there wasn't a lot going on in positive psychology. So I wound up getting a minor in business and got recruited into the leadership track of Arthur Anderson, which no longer exists, but at the time was the largest professional services firm. And that felt like a real kind of a comfortable place for me to go forward, not having a lot of mentorship from my family about what would make sense. But the real impulse that I had at that time was I wanted to study leadership. I wanted to study what makes great people great. What is it about these people that really go out and make a difference in the world? What makes them tick? And contemplating staying and doing an honors thesis at UCLA and wound up leaving and going to start my career at Arthur Anderson. But that impulse to understand human behavior was there at that time, and it took me a while to kind of circle back and to commit my life to studying it. But those are some of the hints at what I'm doing now that existed at a younger point.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting that you had to turn to the world of business to find something that was more in line with the inspiration that you were seeking. And I think because really of the influence of Maslow and other people who are at the roots of humanistic psychology and the world of business was always always seeking the newest lever. And so the whole thing about organizational development really proved to be fertile ground for a lot of the ideas about personal growth and so on.
Yeah, well, exactly. And, you know, I graduated from UCLA in 96. And so just before the positive psychology movement really started moving forward, at the time, there was almost nothing. When I was looking around at what I could do, there was almost no even hint of the possibility of studying these things scientifically. And but when I got recruited by Arthur Anderson, I was sent to an international leadership thing. And it was the first time I was turned on to the works of people like Stephen Covey and Warren Bennis. And it was so exhilarating for me to realize, wow, I can actually shape my life. I can create something constructive. And at the time, I didn't know who Maslow was. And it took maybe another at least 5 years, maybe even 10, before I even knew beyond some introductory psychology courses where it didn't even stick. So yeah, I think that's very true. And it's so exciting to see. I remember when I read Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi and Martin Seligman's paper. I think it was in, you'd know this better, what's the main journal for the psychology? It's not American Psychology. What is the, do you know the primary journal?
Well, there is a journal called the American Psychologist. Maybe
it might have been. It might have been that where it was January 1st, 2000. It was very significant. Seligman, I think, was the APA president, and
right.
You know, he made. They basically said it's time that we focus on positive psychology. And I read that after selling my first business and figuring out what I wanted to do. I remember reading that in the library at UCSD, and my blood just literally was just so. I was so excited about the possibility of studying all this great stuff. And again, getting it scientifically established.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of your excitement, one of your hallmarks I've learned, I think, is your passion and enthusiasm. Were you born that way as your basic temperament, would you say? Or was that something that you really had to work at?
I want to say yes and yes. I was the kind of kid that was really happy that all the coaches wanted to have on their team and just super passionate about doing well and kind of giving my best from an unconscious perspective. And it's one of my signature strengths to go to Martin Seligman's character strengths VIA test. Hope and optimism is one of my top five. And it's something that I work on diligently. So the idea of both actually hope and optimism and energy and enthusiasm are two of the character strengths identified in that test that I consciously cultivate on a day by day and week by week basis. So as you know from my work and from the book, that's optimism is just for me the hallmark of health, and it's something that I spend a lot of time on and cultivating. Because I also have a tendency to go the other way. I've had a lot of challenges in my family and in my own life emotionally, and have just really, I take that seriously, and the vulnerability that I seem to have genetically keeps me on a straight and narrow path of keeping my thoughts right.
Okay, well, good for you. And yes makes sense to me as a great answer. Now, you did build two successful web portals that you were able to sell. Tell us about those, eTeams and Zads.
And
Zads Daily Wisdom and Learning Out Loud, I discovered as I was searching around.
Huh. Yeah, so interesting. I went to UCLA, studied psychology and business, as we discussed, left to work at Arthur Andersen. I knew that wasn't for me. And I wound up working in four service lines in less than a year. And the joke is I probably hold the record for that. Was trained in three different service lines and worked in four. And then I went to law school up north at Berkeley, thinking that would be kind of where I can get a stamp saying I'm a smart guy and can go out and make my six figures a year and all that stuff that
right.
A blue-collar kid wants to make sure they can do.
Yes, so, yes.
You know, I knew that that wasn't for me, and I dropped out before a semester was over. And at the time, the only thing I knew I wanted to do was burn my resume and coach a Little League baseball team. Mm. And so I wound up doing that and moved back in with my mom at 23 and worked with the neighborhood kids baseball team, was an assistant coach for them. And in the process of following that little glimpse of bliss, if you will, that I had, came up with an idea to create eTeams, which was kind of like in many ways, to use today's language, a Facebook for Little League baseball teams, AYSO soccer teams, families involved in sports. At the time, there was nothing that made it easy for these teams and leagues to create websites. And I had a little bit of experience in technology with Arthur Andersen and saw that in a matter of time, every team and league in the world would be using this technology. So cracked open my piggy banks with a few thousand dollars in it, and partner with a tech genius, and we created eTeams, which wound up being a lot of fun and learned a lot during the first dot-com boom.
Great. And then what was Zads?
So then Zads, so I sold eTeams, and then I had enough to take a little bit of time to figure out what I wanted to do when I grew up, became a philosopher for the first time then, and studied all this different stuff. And then I ran out of that money, needed to figure out what am I going to do. And Zads was really the integration of my passion for understanding life and studying philosophy and spirituality and self-development with my passion for creating cool businesses, particularly technology-driven businesses. And it was essentially my passion for that as a philosopher with my passion as an entrepreneur and building social media sites. And Zads was essentially a Facebook-like site for people interested in changing the world. And We had some great investors and some great people on that team to really connect people to other people who are passionate about making a difference.
And so did that website get sold or acquired finally as well?
Yeah, so we sold that one to a company called Gaiam, which is a NASDAQ business, and they integrated that into their platform. But really, really fun, and learned a lot, and just a great process.
I saw too that for a while you got an infusion of money from the guy who was heading up Whole Foods, another business visionary type person.
Yeah, he's a friend and mentor of mine, and someone I have a great deal of respect for, and have learned a lot from, and have been blessed to have his support. And yeah, so he invested, and that was one of the highlights of that venture, was meeting a lot of great people. So met a lot of the authors and teachers who I admired, and got a chance to work with them, and had some extraordinary investors as well.
To what extent were those businesses informed by your spiritual orientation?
I think the first business was really informed by my passion, kind of a very naive, young, unformed passion for doing something fun.
Yeah.
We created a great culture in our business, and that was great. But I didn't really have a lot of stability emotionally or entrepreneurially. You know, 24 years old, raised $5 million, and the market crashed. And it was a great opportunity to learn a lot. And that really taught me the importance of having fundamentals and having practices in my life that keep me grounded and keep me stable and healthy. And then Zods was very much an attempt to integrate my own challenges, integrating spirituality and capitalism in the form of a business. And we're driven by really high ideals. And again, we're a little bit overambitious, if you will, in some of our plans. But we had good intention and good heart. Now I'm really excited. I'm now 36 and I've kind of been through those ventures and learned a little bit more. And it's even more fun to really bring in a lot of the virtue and the diligence and the patience and the persistence and the long range thinking that I didn't necessarily have as well tuned in the first couple businesses.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about your website, which seems to be the major current focus, Philosopher's Notes. How did that come about?
So Philosopher's Notes came about as I was running Zods. I got to a point where I'd been doing that for 3 years, and we had raised a few million dollars and had learned a lot. And we were also having challenges meeting payrolls, and all those things were kind of going in. I was really checking in and seeing what is it that I really want to do? And I found myself reading a few different books and was struck by the idea of what is my real dharma and purpose? And I questioned whether it was as a pure entrepreneur in that context. And I realized that it wasn't for me. And I decided to sell the business shortly after having that epiphany. Within 30 days, we had the deal done and the business is transitioning and all of that stuff. And then I decided to give myself a PhD in how to live. So I had long looked at positive psychology programs from Seligman and Sternberg and these other guys I really admire, to PhD programs in philosophy or religious studies, but none of them really integrated all of the ideas that I wanted to study. So I decided somewhat playfully to give myself my own PhD. And I would study old school philosophy and spirituality and mysticism to modern day positive psychology and self-development and creativity and health and nutrition in relationships and business and all the things that I think go into creating a really thriving life in the 21st century. And then the idea was I'd get a master's when I had read 100 of the classic optimal living books and distilled them into 6-page PDFs and 20-minute MP3s that I got paid to create. So there was an integration of following my heart and my passion with getting paid to do it and demonstrating that you can do this kind of thing. So that was the idea with the master's, 100 notes that became the philosopher's notes and a profitable business sharing this wisdom. So that's where philosophersnotes.com came from.
And I think you said you spent 2 years reading those 100 books and heavily annotating them.
Exactly.
Do I have that right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was basically a 2-year process, which is an appropriate span of a master's program, if you will. So the idea was from the old school classics to the modern, how can I synthesize them into these 6-page PDFs, pulling out what I call big ideas? So every book has about 10 big ideas. I put them into this PDF in a little highlighter format, as you've seen, and tried to tie them to other teachers. I wanted to show that what Buddha said, or what Marcus Aurelius said, or what Nietzsche said is very similar to what positive psychologists are saying today, or what all these teachers are across different cultures and time have said throughout the ages. So that was the idea. And then also I wanted to make it fun. I think that people have a really heavy idea when they think of a philosopher, or they think of philosophy. And so I wanted to have fun with it, yet ground it in really deep wisdom that's endured the ages, and then grounded in the scientific truths we know today. And then most importantly, make it practical. So inspiring, fun, grounded and smart and practical. So these ideas that you can take into your life right now. And the idea is, in 20 minutes, can I share an idea with you from this book, Time to Read, that can change your life?
Yeah, what, one of your catchphrases is more wisdom in less time.
Yeah, exactly.
And you pull it off, I have to say. So for you've already gone down this path a good way, but for people who haven't been to the Philosopher Notes site, give them a sense of what they'll find there.
Yeah, so at philosophersnotes.com, you'll find a really simple website that overviews provides an overview of what I just described, and you can sign up to get these 100 notes, and I'm working on a second volume right now. I also have created not only the PDFs and the MP3s of all of these books, but also mini TV episodes, 10-minute little YouTube videos where I share the big ideas, a few of them, and hopefully inspire you to live with more virtue. So that's the basic idea. Really, really simple, and something that's been a lot of fun to do, and again, have had a lot of fun meeting great people like you in the process.
Well, thank you. I'm impressed by your generosity. You have an interesting business model for the site. You come out and very clearly say that the cost is $100 on the one hand, and on the other hand, you say anyone can declare themselves needing a scholarship and pay whatever they wish. What was your thinking behind that approach?
Yeah, a great question. I appreciate your compliment and our intention. One of my other strengths is kindness and generosity. Out of the top five, my strengths are, we already talked about, hope and optimism, energy and enthusiasm, kindness and generosity, wisdom and creativity. Those are actually six in the two tests I've taken, another one being courage. But for us, my wife and I have been working on this together, and she has her own projects which are associated with kind of our basic businesses that we have. But the idea was, if we were going to create the ideal business, what would it look like? How would we want to interact with someone's business? And for us, our business is as much a ministry as it is anything else. And we played around with the idea of being a nonprofit and have often contemplated just the idea. We really admire the idea that when you go to church, for example, no one's sitting at the front door saying it costs this much to come in today. Everyone's welcome. And you chip in what you can chip in, and it sustains itself that way. And we chose not to go with a nonprofit for many reasons, but we wanted to create a for-profit that really embodied the ideals of a really, really cool, conscious business where money wasn't the obstacle. And not only people in the States who might be having challenging times, but currency conversions literally make the consumption of this stuff cost prohibitive for a lot of people around the world. And I know that because a lot of them are emailing me, asking me this stuff. So we just wanted to come up with a really fun, creative way to share this stuff and trust that in the end, doing the right thing is the right thing for a really successful business. As John Mackey says, good business is good business. And so we're really enjoying the creative challenge of creating a business that we're proud of and that does the right thing. And for us, it's a digital product, and it doesn't cost us anything more incrementally to share what we do digitally. Therefore, it makes total sense to make it available for the $100. We have a pick-your-price model, as you alluded to. Not only do we have scholarships, we've given away thousands of scholarships. I'm not sure what the number is, but it's approaching 5,000 now, I think. And there are the scholarship applications we get from people totally affirms what we're doing. People from... we're on Social Security and just barely can get by on what they have, to have suffered debilitating illnesses, to lost their job and haven't been able to get a new one for a year. It just makes it so obvious that there's a lot of challenges out there, and for us to be able to share in this way gives us a lot of meaning and purpose, and just feels like the right thing to do. So that's a long-winded answer to your question. But
Well, it makes sense to me that you said that in a way it feels like a ministry, because it does very much feel that way to me. And I've sometimes felt that way about what I'm doing as well. You know, even though it's ostensibly about psychology, it's always felt to me like there was some other deeper message, maybe not as explicitly articulated as you've been able to do. I really love the way that you've articulated what you're doing. I'm curious, what is it that your wife is up to? You said she's got her own irons in the fire.
Yeah, so when we got married, we created a business called Entheos Enterprises. So Entheos being two other little Greek words that we love, which form the basis of enthusiasm. So Entheos, enthusiasm, means God within. So for us, our commitment to our lives is to give our greatest strengths and greatest service to the world and to help people plug into the divine within and to really shine with a radiant enthusiasm. That's kind of the ethos of our life and our business. Philosopher's Notes is one of our businesses, and she's been working on something called Rock Your Goddess Life. And her idea is, just as I am passionate about making philosophy fun and in a lot of ways sexy and playful and just a cool thing to do, she's doing the same with the idea of what it means to be a goddess in the 21st century, and less based in the mythology of goddess and more, she would say, all women have the divine feminine within them. And she's identified 10 elements of rocking your goddess life, from playfulness and confidence to health and fitness to sensuality and spirituality and discovering your purpose, etc. So she's been working on a really cool program for that she's been teaching. And we're now developing that. We'll be sharing that next month. But that's her basic idea.
Is there a website that interested people could go to find out more about that?
Absolutely. We'll be launching the rockyourgoddesslife.com website soon. But now she does all of her blogging and stuff like that at mygoddesslife.com. Her name's Alexandra.
Okay. How did you two meet?
Really funny story. When I was running Zods, when I had the business plan for Zods, one of the ideas, and this again, social networking site like Facebook for conscious people, one of the jokes was at one point in the business, we would create kind of a dating service where people can meet other conscious people. And I jokingly said, where else is Brian going to find his wife? That was in the business plan. That was the primary reason why I would do it. And as it turns out, a friend of hers said, you got to check out this website, Zods. I think you'd really enjoy it. And so she checked it out. And this is well before we knew each other, obviously. And she went to the site and said, this is a really cool site. I wonder who built it or who runs it. And she wound up finding her way to my profile. And she said, I'm going to marry this guy. She just loved the books. I have tears in my eyes as I say it. She just loved the books I had read and just had this clear hit that at some point she'd marry me. And this was 6 months before we met. She moved from where she was in Chicago to L.A., wound up moving two blocks from me, unbeknownst to either one of us. And then she was running a conference for eco businesses, thought Zods would be a great sponsor for the business, and told her partners, we need to get Zods to sponsor us. A, they'd be a good sponsor. And B, I need to meet the CEO because I plan to marry him. Long story, a little shorter. I wound up hearing about that from a woman that worked with me. And she said she had found a woman who, jokingly had said that she wanted to marry me and described her to me. And I said, well, we can definitely make a first date happen. And first date happened and there was an extraordinary connection. And almost 4 years later, here we are.
Wow. That's great. Great story. And the funny thing is, it had just occurred to me that somebody who's worked on consciousness as much as you have would certainly have some good synchronicities in his life, some good synchronicity stories. and that certainly is one, and I'm sure there must be others.
Well, I've been blessed. And for me, the thread that kind of underlies all of it is that idea of following our bliss and really trusting our deepest selves and creating our most authentically awesome life is kind of the fun way that we put it. But really having the courage and the audacity to trust ourselves and to go for it. And as we do that, those hidden hands come to help us in ways we couldn't have foreseen. So this is that's definitely one of the ways, and been blessed to see that more and more often. And all the great teachers, as you know, describe that again and again and again. So it's pretty neat to see that come to fruition.
Yeah. Now, you strike me as a yes man in the best sense of the word, that is, someone who says yes to life and yes to new ideas. At the same time, I'm wondering if you ever find anything that's too far out for you.
Mm, yeah, I do. How about The Secret?
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up, but it definitely sprang to mind.
Yeah, I have an allergy too. Again, interestingly, one of the chapters in my book is Follow Your Bliss and Your Grunt. So, you know, Joseph Campbell jokingly said that at one point he wished he had said follow your grunt instead of follow your bliss. And for me, I definitely have, I have an openness, and I'm very excited about exploring possibilities and all that good stuff. But I'm also reasonably conservative, and I just love scientific validation, and I love the idea of moving through rational thought. And so things like The Secret and kind of the silliness of how things like the law of attraction are marketed are disappointing to me. And another thing that I'm excited to do is to kind of bridge that, again, the philosophical truths with some of the scientific stuff, with the fun of self-help. Tal Ben-Shahar. Do you know Tal Ben-Shahar's work?
I do.
Yeah, he's just one of my favorites. Now, of course you do, but he's just great. And I love the way he describes what he looks at, how he writes is bridging the gap between self-development and psychology. You know, the fun of self-help with the rigor of science. And that's something that I'm passionate about as well.
Well, that's great. I'm really glad to hear that. I wanted to ask you, what are some of the big ideas that have had the biggest impact on you? And I know I've actually just finished reading a chapter in which you talk about 10 big ideas. I don't know if you can rattle them off at the top of your head or not. Do you need any prompting?
Well, sure. So you're talking about the 10 principles of optimal living that I articulate?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then the idea was, as I mentioned with the PhD in optimal living, the idea was that I'd get a master's when I had distilled 100 of these classics in optimal living, and then my dissertation project that I created was distilling the wisdom from these great teachers into a modern, you know, fun, inspiring, practical 21st century philosophy, which is what the book is intended to be. So what I saw as I studied all these teachers was that their wisdom could fall into 10 basic principles. And to me, it all started with optimism. All of the great teachers come back to optimism again and again and again and again. And so that's the first principle. And the fact is that if we can't get in control of the contents of our consciousness, as Csikszentmihalyi puts it, then we're in trouble. And none of the other stuff matters. So that was kind of the first principle, was optimism. And then the second one is purpose, just understanding what is it that is our highest calling, our highest destiny, and kind of the idea of Maslow's self-actualization, that we're here to express our unique capacities in a powerful way. And to the extent we don't do that, we're not going to live with a deep sense of fulfillment. So purpose being the second principle. Then the third one is self-awareness. And it's difficult to know what our highest purpose is if we lack self-awareness. So that idea of know thyself and taking the time to contemplate and to do all that work. So optimism, purpose, self-awareness, then we get into more specific grounded stuff in the form of goals. So all that's nice, but it's abstract. How do we take it into the practical? And it could be everything from losing X pounds or running a triathlon or doing a triathlon or starting a family or writing a business plan or whatever it is. What are the goals that drive us? And obviously happy people have projects, they have goals, etc. And then that doesn't matter unless we consistently take action. So the fifth principle is action. And I jokingly say, Guru Nike, just do it. It doesn't matter
right.
You know how many great we don't know how to consistently take action. It's just intellectual banter. And then the sixth principle I've identified is energy, and the fact that you're going to have a hard time living at your highest potential and living optimally if you have a hard time getting out of bed. And a lot of people are into all the other stuff and into psychology and philosophy, et cetera, but they don't eat well and they don't exercise consistently. And as Tal Ben-Shahar says, not exercising is like taking a depressant. And I certainly know that in my life. And I haven't missed a day of exercise since the beginning of the year, and I don't know how long it's been. And that's one of my fundamental commitments. I'm vegan, and I'm passionate about nutrition and exercise and all these good stuff. So that would be the sixth principle, energy. Then the seventh one is wisdom, and wisdom to me encapsulates all the prior elements. And the idea is basically approach life as your classroom. Every opportunity gives us another opportunity to learn and to live with more integrity to our highest ideals. And then the eighth principle is courage. And the idea of courage, I just love the root of the word courage, which comes from the Latin word for heart. So courage is the virtue that literally pumps blood to all the other virtues. Just as our heart pumps blood to our arms and legs and organs, courage is the virtue that vitalizes all the other virtues. And then the ninth principle is love, the idea being that all that stuff's great, but if we don't have a sense of love for ourselves and for our family and community, etc., none of this stuff really matters. And then the tenth and final principle is kind of, when I sketch this out on a whiteboard or a piece of paper, they kind of go in a sequence. And then I draw a circle around all of it and a circle at the center, and that's entheos. So that's God within. And the idea, Joseph Campbell said that God is both the circumference and the center of the circle. So that idea that it's the center of everything and it's that infinite kind of encompassing element. So the ultimate idea here is, how do we connect to that divine within us? And those nine principles really guide us there. And as we do that, we live with that radiant enthusiasm that only comes when we live in integrity with our highest values. So those are the basic 10 principles: optimism, purpose, self-awareness, goals, action, energy, wisdom, courage, love, and entheos.
You definitely have earned your PhD.
Well, I appreciate that.
You just passed your orals.
That's fantastic. Dr. Dave announces. That's great.
Yes. Yeah, you started off with entheos. We started off talking about enthusiasm, your enthusiasm. And one of the things that you noted is that the word enthusiasm has as its root entheos that you were just referring to, that sense of God within.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I seem to recall that we had an email exchange initially when we were first touching base with one another. Somehow Holosync came up, and I think you said that had a positive influence on your development.
It has, and meditation in general, and Holosync has been one of the products that both Alexander and I have used. We, 2.5 years ago maybe, decided that we were never going to miss a day of meditation again in our lives, and have kept that streak going for 2.5 years and don't intend to miss a day. And for both of us. And we started with Holosync. It was a great way for us to leverage their technology and kind of helping us drop out of beta into alpha, even theta, and he would say down into delta. So Holosync has been a big part of our practice, and it was for the first 1.5, 2 years. And now we're actually developing our own stuff that you and I chatted about it does very similar things that we've been using for the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, so I'll give you a chance to promote that if you'd like to.
Sure. Well, the basic idea, we're really passionate about meditation. And from a general perspective, as Benson would describe it, the relaxation response. We've experienced extraordinary benefits in our lives, both physiologically and being able to get out of the fight or flight into a relaxed state. And, you know, we know scientifically, again, that you can literally change your genetic expression through 12 to 15 minutes of daily meditation over as little as 8 weeks. You can change that significantly. And that, to me, is just such an amazing thing. And so we're excited about helping people make meditation a more consistent part of their lives. And it's become the most frequently asked question we've had, because we talk about our meditation practice a lot. People ask us, well, how should I start my meditation practice? And we really haven't had a good place to send people to say, well, this is where you should go. Because there's, you know, we've done transcendental meditation, we've done Holosync, we've done Vipassana, and they're all great, but we're excited to develop something that we hope is a little bit more approachable for a lot of people. And the basic idea is we'll be leveraging, it's called Blissitations, and we'll be launching blissitations.com over the next 2 months or so. And using the binaural beat technology to help people go from the beta to the alpha and even a light theta state. And then also doing a lot of guided meditation, or we call them guided blissitation work, and helping people develop different virtues from optimism and courage and health and love and gratitude and all this stuff. So that's the basic idea of what we're up to, and really excited about it, and plan to interview a lot of the leading teachers involved in meditation, and just, again, make it fun, make it approachable, and make it cool. It's something that people can do consistently.
Yes, yes. And you sent me a link, and I know that you, I think you have something right now, a capability to embed sort of like subliminal affirmations that people can send in, the affirmations that they would like embedded.
And
then that's kind of there to help move their process along.
Exactly.
And you had a couple of generic meditations there with the sound. And I wasn't clear if those have some subliminal suggestions in them yet or not.
They don't. What we've done is, and I appreciate the question, we'll make that more clear. What we've done is we have a basic, we call it daily mojo. So again, kind of keeping it light, daily mojo, use it for 15 minutes or 30 minutes. We have two different types of tracks with the soothing sounds of rain or flowing water or an ocean wave sound with the binaural beats that help guide you into a meditative state. The simple ones don't have any subliminals at all, but then we also offer the option for people to record their own affirmations, 2 to 5 minutes worth, that we then underlay on those tracks subliminally. So your conscious mind can't hear them, but your subconscious mind does pick it up, and people can meditate with that. Now, a lot of people, I think, overhype the potential benefits of subliminals, and it doesn't have quite the scientific research that I'd like to see to kind of know that it has the impact.
Yes.
But as we talked about in our emails, visual priming or visual subliminals, the results are stunning of what we're learning about at my alma mater, UCLA, and it's just amazing stuff. Now, we're being conservative about what the potential effects of audible priming or audible subliminals could be, but my hunch is there's a lot of potential there, and I'm excited to see the science catch up with it. And we meditate with our subliminal affirmations in our tracks every morning, and something I'm excited about and we're excited to share. So that will definitely be part of it and is part of it.
Okay. Well, I wonder if there are any final thought that you'd like to leave our listeners with. It seems like we've covered a lot of ground, and maybe we're at a place where we should begin to wrap it up.
We have. I appreciate it. Really, really appreciate the invitation and enjoyed our conversation very much.
Any last words that you'd like to leave our audience with?
I feel like I shared a lot of words.
Yeah, you did. You really did. And what is it Marshall McLuhan says? The message is the massage. and you've definitely done that. So, Brian Johnson, thanks for being my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dave.
I hope you're inspired by this interview with Brian Johnson. I know that I was. I have to say that Brian's compilation of his 100 Philosopher's Notes, MP3s, and PDFs is an amazing collection of the perennial wisdom delivered by a diverse collection of thinkers, ranging from Nietzsche to Buddha, from Martin Seligman to Joseph Campbell, from Marcus Aurelius to Byron Katie, and so many more. It's giving me a chance to at least familiarize myself with some of the important figures I've somehow not gotten around to. Not only does Brian summarize their big ideas, but he also weaves in his own thoughts and links them to one another. The most salient thing about Brian is his determination to walk the talk. He's hard on those who are merely browsing in the supermarket of spiritual ideas rather than putting them into practice. He challenges himself and the rest of us to get off our duffs and really put our deepest truths into action. You can learn more about Brian at www.brianjohnson.me. And Brian is spelled B-R-I-A-N. And you'll also find links there to his Philosopher's Notes series, his Optimal Living 101, the Blissitations binaural audio meditation tracks we discussed, and his Entheos site.
Let us all come together to see what we can find. Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Let us all remember what you seek is what you find. Dr. Dave is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Exploring our spirit and our psyche, we are learning to unwind. Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind.
To all of you faithful listeners out there, have I told you lately how much I appreciate you all? Well, I do. And I appreciate the fact that your interest in Shrink Wrap Radio has kept us on the iTunes page of top-rated education podcasts now for some time. After a torrential rainy season, it's looking like spring has sprung here in Northern California. Looking out the window of my second-story home office, it looks like it's a beautiful sunny day out there. I'm really excited about my current interview that's up at the wisecounselpodcast.com. It's an interview with Stanislav Grof, MD, on transpersonal psychology and the meaning of psychedelic experience. Dr. Grof was one of the early LSD researchers, back when LSD research in this country was legal. And I know there's some small amount of legal research that's happening again, but I'm talking about the old days, right? Back before Timothy Leary became such a hit and got the research closed down. Well, Stan Grof's explorations, both personal and with his research subjects, led him to develop his own maps of consciousness. And later, he developed the holotropic breath work as a non-pharmaceutical way of inducing psychedelic states for inner therapeutic work. He's had an absolutely fascinating career, and I know you'll find it a stimulating interview. In a way, I think it's synchronistically a great match for the interview you just heard with Brian Johnson. Don't forget, if you need CE units as a professional, we have two APA-accredited courses where you can earn your units by listening to these podcasts. One course is on the wisdom of the dream, and the other is on positive psychology and the quest for happiness. And right now, I'm working on getting up a couple more courses, so stay tuned for that. And even if you're not a professional who needs CE units, you know, you can earn a certificate showing that you have passed these sequences, and that's something you can frame and hang on your wall and be proud of, or perhaps use to get some extra pay in your job, whatever that might be. Now, when you visit shrinkwrapradio.com, as I hope you will, you'll also find links to discounts at Angie's List, 4inkjets.com, and shoebuy.com. I myself have saved money on printer ink several times now at 4inkjets.com. And you'll recall that the dress shoes that I ordered from shoebuy.com some time back were a bit too large when they arrived, but I was able to send them back for a smaller size for free, no shipping charges. Now, thanks for your help in spreading the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends, colleagues, fellow students, relatives, and others. I'm pretty aggressive about doing that myself when I'm out and about in the world. I pass out cards to people because I truly believe there is content here that's potentially of interest and even benefit to just about everyone. So do keep spreading the word, and don't forget to blog and Twitter about your favorite episodes. One of the benefits of this free service is that nearly all of our interviews have been transcribed due to the generous support of volunteer transcribers. In fact, there are some new transcripts on the site since the last time that we spoke. Shrink Wrap Radio number 226, Dream Sight with Jane Teresa Anderson. That was a wonderful interview, and that was transcribed by Trina Fink. Thanks so much, Trina. And number 227, Reclaiming Your Real Self with Rick Johnson, was transcribed by Erica Steves. And I know many people loved that interview, so it's wonderful having that transcript available. And number 244, Stories of the Middle Passage with Jungian analyst James Hollis, Ph.D., and that was transcribed by the combo of Billy Braddock and Sister Susan. Billy Braddock got too busy to finish up, and Sister Susan stepped in, and so I'm very grateful to both of them. And we need more transcribers. I'm really looking for someone to transcribe, for example, number 109, War and the Soul, with Edward Tick, Ph.D. That was a wonderful interview. I was very inspired by it. And it's one I'm thinking of including in a CE course, and was shocked not to find a transcript. Those transcripts are so helpful to me when doing something like preparing a CE course. I need to generate exam questions for those courses, and I can do that so much more quickly when I can skim through the written transcript rather than having to re-listen to the whole thing all over again. I'm sure it's similarly helpful to students writing papers, and so just remember, students, don't plagiarize, and be sure to cite Shrink Wrap Radio as the source. So at any rate, we could use some new transcriptionist energy. Please drop me an email if you'd be willing to volunteer to take on one or more episodes. Thanks to all of you who've contributed financial support by clicking on that big green donate button on our homepage.
Hi, this is Jerry Trumbull, continuing my inner space explorations in Denver, Colorado. And you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Yes, it's true. Jerry Trumbull will be back on our next podcast. Now let's take a quick dip into the old email bag. First, we hear from Dina Chappelle, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. This is Dina Chappelle. I'm a student of psychology at Goddard College and a singer-songwriter. Back in 09, I asked you to play a track from my Carl Jung-inspired album, The Voices of the Archetypes, on your show. You were gracious enough to play Song for Child. Well, here it is, 2011, and I have just released another album I've entitled The Continuing Story of Roses in Crazy Land. I was wondering if you would play the attached MP3. It's called Sin, and it addresses the inner demon. I continue to be a faithful listener of Shrink Wrap Radio. Thank you so much for all that you do. I'm always telling my friends and fellow students about your show. Yay! I'm very excited that you will be interviewing Stanislav Grof on Wise Counsel. Grof's work has had a profound impact on my life and my studies. I was so excited by your show that featured Barry Spector that I inspired several people to buy his incredible book. I've also enjoyed listening to your conversations with your friend and colleague, Jerry Trumbull. I love the honesty in which you both approach the mystery of reality in relation to quantum physics, and it is indeed a fine line between cutting-edge science with psychological implications and, quotes, New Age airheadedness. Again, thank you so much for doing what you do, and I hope that you enjoy the track. If you find that you would like to play it and your listeners are interested in the album, they can visit my webpage, www.dinachappelle.com. And I'll spell that. It's DeenaChappelle.com. And she concludes, "Take good care, Dina Chappelle." And I wanted to read the words to you before playing the song. And so I just sent off an email to Dina asking her for the words. And as synchronicity would have it, she had just finished listening to the Stan Grof interview and was reflecting on synchronicity. And this is weeks after she sent me the email that I just read to you. So here are the words to the song that you're about to hear. It's titled Sin. There was no moon last night. The sky was black as lead. I had no strength to fight the demon in my bed. He said, you're gonna fail. You know you always will. He switched and swayed his tail. Then he moved in for the kill. Just close your eyes now, girl. Relax and let me in. I'll decimate your world and you won't feel a thing. I begged to be released, but his heart was made of stone. He said, you can't be free now, 'cause you're all alone. And then the chorus is, Mama, won't you let me in? Father, wash away my sins. Sister, don't turn your back on me again. And brother, I know you've been here. Show me how to win. And the second verse goes, his eyes burned green and gold. His tongue was dripping hell. My bed was freezing cold amidst the rotting smell. He said, you take your time. Perhaps you want to pray. This trip is yours, not mine, but I ain't got all day. Third verse, okay, now you decide if this is your last breath. You can choose the pain of life or the nothingness of death. I looked into my soul to ask her what was real. She said, let life unfold, then tell me how you feel. Then came the dawn of light and the demon wore a smile. He said, don't get me wrong, you know I dig your style, but I am what I am and what I am is you. He took a bow and shook my hand. He left me with the truth. And so those are the words, and here is the song. Well, rock on, Dina. Next, we hear from John in Ireland, who writes, Dear Dr. Dave, I'm just writing to express my appreciation for all the hard work you put into your podcasts on Shrink Wrap Radio and Wise Counsel. I'm a school chaplain in Cork, Ireland, and regularly listen to your podcasts on my way to or from work, and have particularly enjoyed your sessions on Jung. I know you're always looking for donations, but cannot help just as yet. As you know, Ireland is being hit hard financially at the moment. Anyway, below I've put a link to an article I read in the English Independent newspaper on how a lack of empathy is the root of evil. I think you'll find it interesting, and the psychologist mentioned, Simon Baron Cohen, may be an interesting guest at some point. Again, thank you for all your hard work. Yours, and he signs it, John. And I think you can find that very interesting article. Indeed, he might make a good guest, Simon Baron Cohen. Just do a Google search on his name and empathy, and it should come up. And John, I really appreciate your impulse to make a donation, but I know there are many people out there who are facing hard times and can't really afford to do that. And so please don't feel bad. And the next one is from Russ, who writes, Hi, Dr. Dave. I can't recall if I made the suggestion before, but are you familiar with Dr. John Sarno? If not, I really recommend you check him out. He's not a trained psychologist, therapist, or psychiatrist. In fact, he's a rehabilitation doctor at NYU, but he's a giant in the mind-body medicine world. Basically, in the course of being a physical rehab physician, this man discovered that many, many people with chronic pain problems, back pain, knee pain, shoulder pain, carpal tunnel syndrome, etc., actually had at the root of their physical pain serious emotional pain, mostly in the form of repressed anger and hurt. He then went on to see that many, many other chronic diseases could be cured by uncovering repressed emotions. As a result, he became a kind of accidental Freudian. He's an older gentleman now and has written several very, very influential books on this stuff. If you're interested, here are some links about him. And of course, you can find links just by Googling John E. Sarno. Russ goes on to say, this man is really incredible, and there's a whole lot of truth to this idea that repressed emotions can manifest as physical, chronic disease processes. What's even more amazing is that people cure themselves of crippling conditions simply by coming to see what is really at the root of it. So that was from Russ, and I responded back to him that I went on the internet, And I found not only information about Dr. Sarno, but also people who are labeling him as a quack. And so clearly his work is controversial. And so I wrote back to Russ saying that I wasn't sure that I wanted to go ahead with an interview with him, although there was a lot of sort of testimonial type evidence. There was no research to support Dr. Sarno's work. And Russ responded back to me. He said, yes, Dr. Sarno is controversial, but in my experience, most of the people he irks are those in the, quotes, chronic pain industry, end quote, and those who are invested in keeping people semi-disabled. For example, chiropractors, who in my opinion are the biggest quacks there are, says, I can tell you from personal experience that his approach worked for me. This after seeing chiropractors for years and even having back surgery. I haven't had any back pain in about 6 years, but I understand and respect your decision to steer clear of him. He does shatter a whole lot of mainstream ideas about the meaning of pain with no apparent organic causes. Cheers, Russ. Okay, next we hear from Dr. John, who writes, I just listened to the last two podcasts, and I have to say these are really interesting, great interviews. I met the director of a mental health center and have sent them a few podcast links that would be relevant. I have two comments, one of which is a typo that might be a Freudian slip showing. It's from the intro on number 260 with Rob Hedaya. It says detoxification, and I think it probably is supposed to be detoxification. And yes, John, you are right about that. Thanks for calling that to our attention. It's been fixed. He goes on to say the other one is the one you and Jerry just did on number 259. It was really interesting, and so I read the paper that you referenced, which is quite interesting, and I would say even elegant. It strikes me as a possible foundation for memory storage internal to the cell. And he's referring here to an article by Stuart Hameroff and others that appeared in the Journal of Integrative Neuroscience about the encoding of microtubule lattices. And I have to say that it impressed us also as a possible foundation for the storage of memories in individual cells. He goes on to say, where I get boggled is, and it may be the science writer, see below, is where in biocentric thought they point out that we use mechanisms to make sense of things, molding sensations into multidimensional objects, but then sort of go off and say that there isn't really anything there and use quantum mechanics to prove it. So from my work at Fermilab, I realized that at a certain point, our understanding of how we perceive matter gets really confusing. Maybe the scientific belief system has turned on itself. He goes on to say, at least Hameroff has stimulated enough attention to cause an interesting reaction and debate. I think that says something in itself. Keep up the great interviews. And that's from John. Now, I have to say I was impressed to hear that John works at Fermilab. He may have said something about that to me in the past. I know he's an interesting person in his own right and even suggested that perhaps he might want to make himself available for an interview. But hopefully he's going to refresh my memory or tell me about his work at Fermilab. It might be relevant. Next, we hear from Rick, who writes, hey, Dave, I said I would let you know how my application turned out. I've been offered a slot in CSPP's clinical PhD program. CSPP, by the way, stands for California School of Professional Psychology. He says, I'm going to accept the offer. You've been an important piece in the puzzle that is my life. Take care, my friend. And he signs that, Rick the Insightful. In the past, he has signed himself Rick the Insomniac, and I think Rick something else, and I suggested that that was kind of a negative self-description to be putting out. So he took the hint, and he's referred to himself here as Rick the Insightful. Congratulations to you, Rick the Insightful. And then he wrote back after I congratulated him, and he said, thanks, Dave, in my 47 years on Earth, I've come to believe that several things are absolutely true here, and here are three. One, that no one is successful in life without the help of others. Two, that even when we think we've gotten away with doing something wrong, we pay sometime down the line. And three, I didn't figure this out until I was in my early 40s, that we find happiness and peace when we follow our bliss. Our bliss is the soft whisper of God's voice in our ear, guiding us toward our unique purpose. I'll report in now and then to update you on my progress. Feel free to share these correspondences with your listeners. And he signs himself Rick the Determined. And good, determination is what it's going to take to get through that PhD program. Next, we hear from Lisa, who writes, I'm a third-year doctoral student in depth psychology with emphasis in psychotherapy at Pacifica Graduate Institute, and have been a practicing licensed psychotherapist / dance movement therapist for 26 years. I've really enjoyed listening to your interviews. I feel your welcoming and interested attention with each and every guest, and this is very impressive to me. I feel at home with your open attitude and curiosity, which seem emblematic of the psychotherapy process itself. Thank you for creating the show! Exclamation point. I have posted some of your interviews on my Facebook page, and she gives a link to her page there. So I have a show suggestion for you. The unity of mind and body are hot topics in psychology and medicine right now, yet few people know that dance movement therapies were the trailblazers in this field way back before it was popular. They have consistently held the torchlight on this and deserve some long overdue credit. Dance movement therapy began over 60 years ago in the modern view of psychology, but dance has always been a part of the healing process in human communities, probably since before recorded history. How about interviewing some dance movement therapists on your show? As a Jungian myself, I'd recommend two people. Both are Jungian analysts, PhDs, dance movement therapists, and both are published. Joan Chatterow and Tina Stromstead. They are both affiliated with the San Francisco Jung Institute. One show each? Why not? It's about time. Keep up the great work, and thanks, Lisa. Lisa, that's a great suggestion, and I'll do my best to follow up on it. And finally, I close with this one from Justin, who writes, "Dear Dave, I've been listening to your podcast for a few years now and have finally gotten around to emailing you. I find the information you present on both your Shrink Wrap and Wise Counsel podcasts extremely interesting and educational. A few years ago, I decided to leave my good-paying corporate position and career of over 15 years to return to graduate school and my former career working with children with pervasive developmental disorders, mainly autism. At 40 and with a small child, it was a difficult transition, but I'm happy to report that I will graduate with my MA in clinical psychology in September and hope to become a licensed MFT in the near future. Of course, the details of my existentially prompted life transition are more complex, but suffice it to say the topics you discuss often resonate strongly with me on my current path. Although I made a modest donation today, I hope to continue doing so as I am able to. Please continue your podcasts as they offer a unique learning experience that rivals both my graduate and clinical experiences. Best of all, I can do it while stuck in 405 traffic. Thanks again, respectfully." And that's Justin, who is in Orange County, California, where the 405 runs. So thank you, Justin, for that. Thank you for your financial contribution and for your enthusiastic support. And with that, I think we better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails, as always, to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site, and you can leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod. And you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to today's guest, Brian Johnson, for sharing his very inspiring and practical approach to applied philosophy. As I mentioned earlier, my next show will once again feature a dialogue between me and my very good friend, Jerry Trumbull. I hope you'll join us. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.